Brad Sesmatch Show, broadcasting live from the Skyview Network Studios.
Well, hi there. Good morning and welcome to Thursday on the Brad Sesmatch Show. I'm Jeff Munn, voice of Arizona State women's basketball and a few other things. And I'm filling in for Brad today. As you probably know, if you tuned in the show yesterday, Brad is, I believe he's en route to Chicago, driving his daughter to college. And I'm sure they're having a great time, but it's also kind of an emotional time when you take one of your kids off to college. In any event, I'm in here today for Brad. And we got a very good show coming up for you, and I'm going to get it started by raising a question that I actually raised this morning on Facebook, and I would very much like to just put it out there. I realize that, well, you can interact with me. There's my Twitter handle, at Moneyball. If you want to say something to me about what I'm about to talk about here in a minute, feel free to tweet me because I'd really like to hear different opinions. Jude LaCava from Fox 10 will join us today. Talk about Cardinal camp getting started. And yeah, we'll talk a little bit about the D-backs. I thought Brad's interview with Pedro Gomez yesterday was terrific. Pedro had some terrific insights, as he always does. And I just, it's one of those things. It's at a point where you're not sure how much more you can add to things beyond what has been said. And I don't know if there's a better guy to talk to about things involving the D-backs than Pedro Gomez on a national level. But we will talk about things with Jude because I love Jude's perspective on things. And you want to talk about a guy who's dialed in with the decision makers in this town? Jude LaCava, there are very few people who are better at it than Jude. It is Bill Gutekunst Day. We'll talk with the Gannett and AZ Central chief film critic about the latest Bourne installment. And a movie, and I was just reading about this, about the movie Nerve, which sounds like a fascinating movie if you're into, I don't necessarily think it's a horror film, but it's an action adventure with kind of a dark twist to it. What am I saying? Bill Gutekunst is the film critic. We'll let him talk about that. But just to prove that Brad has ultimate confidence in everybody on his staff, not only am I here for Brad, but Eric Sorensen has fled the hills and gone off to places unknown. But we are in the capable hands of Caitlin Slater, who is filling in for Eric today. And I did promise Caitlin we'd put her on camera so that her family and all her classmates at Azusa Pacific could see her on television. Hi, Caitlin.
Hi, how are you, Jeff?
I'm good. And
glad to have you.
What's that?
Glad to have you here.
It's good to be here, and we're glad to have you here as well.
We put the intern in charge today.
Well, you said that. I didn't. I was going to have this, like, you're really the power broker here at Sports360AZ.com, and we just kind of leave you behind the scenes because we don't want to intimidate Eric. But now that you said that you're the intern, and you are a student at Azusa Pacific. Mm-hmm. You are due to go back to school in a couple of weeks, I'm told.
Yes.
And we forget, I forget sometimes that the class schedule at a lot of other schools around the country is different than here. I think the ASU fall semester starts in a week or 2 weeks. Fall semester at Azusa Pacific, I bet, doesn't start until sometime in September.
Yeah, first week of September.
So you've got a little bit more time here.
Yeah, but I go back early for cheer camp, so I'm heading back around the same time.
And Azusa Pacific is located specifically where?
It's in Azusa, California, which is, I like to describe it a little bit east of Pasadena. It's kind of on the outskirts of L.A.
It's warm over there right now.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, it's, it's coast and it's the ocean, but you get inland of the beaches, and it's pretty warm over in L.A. right now. Mm-hmm. So it's good to have you here.
Thank you. Good to have you here.
It's we're looking forward to a fun show today. All right. I'm going to get right to this. First of all, the news of the day, the D-backs got a very solid performance, the kind of performance that has to really raise a lot of optimism with Archie Bradley last night. Seven innings, a run, four hits, three walks, six strikeouts. They beat the Brewers 8-1. They wrap up that series today and then go on to Los Angeles for a weekend set with the Dodgers. Don't believe that there's going to be much more done in the trade market coming up to the Monday deadline for the D-backs because unfortunately, and I do say this unfortunately, Daniel Hudson, I think he's hit a rough patch and he might have been a trade candidate. Tyler Clippard might be a trade candidate, but I just really don't see much else happening in the way of the D-backs making trades going toward the deadline. Maybe Clippard because he would bring some value back and the D-backs still are in need of bolstering the farm system a little bit. So it'll be interesting to see what Dave Stewart does the next couple of days or, the more interesting thing might be what he doesn't do. By the way, the Brewers 5 errors last night. you better win going away if the team's going to hand you five errors. Jimmy Nelson, who has always been a guy with a lot of potential when he was in the Pacific Coast League, was tagged for 8 runs, 6 earned in 4 2/3 innings last night. So a good win for the D-backs, and boy, did they need it. They've been in bad need of just something to feel good about. Yasmani Tomas, another 2-homer game. He's had 2 of them now on this road trip. And maybe Yasmani Tomas is starting to turn a corner. Got the batting average up to .262. Who knows? He's been the subject, you know, Brad and Pedro talked, Pedro Gomez talked a lot about Tomas yesterday, and up to this point, up to this trip, yeah, there haven't been a lot of highlights in the time he's been in the big leagues, but maybe a couple of 2-homer games, he's starting to turn it around. But a couple of things that I wanted to get out there, because it's the type of day that we can roll some things out that I think are worthy of just you thinking about it, or again, if you want to tweet me at Moneyball and you want to offer me your thoughts. 2 things. We continue to hear discussions about the conditions in Rio leading up to the Olympics, which now are literally, I think, a couple of weeks away. And I, Caitlin, I don't know if you know, I don't remember what the opening day of the opening ceremonies is for the Rio Olympics, but they moved the PGA Championship up 2 weeks. It's starting today, and I know it's to avoid a conflict with the Olympics. So Caitlin is busy finding that
opening
information
day
out.
Opening day is August 5th.
So it is right around there. In fact, it's August 5th is next week. Well, okay. Yeah. We continue to hear the stories, and Caitlin and I talked about it before the show today, about the story you heard, Caitlin, that swimmers are now being advised to not basically hold their noses when they're in the water in swimming competition or
that's,
something to that
that's
effect.
That's what I hear. I hear don't open your mouth when you're swimming.
We continue to hear these stories about the conditions in Rio, and I'll just say this. Number one, it's way too late to consider anything about moving the games. Even though there are places, London has the facilities to do it. Other cities on the planet could, on a short notice, and it would be really short notice, I guess, handle some of the events at the Olympics, but it would be a nightmare. Canceling the games, I don't think that's going to happen. Not now. And the reason is not because Rio is, well, you're overblowing these predictions of dire circumstances. The determining factor in whether or not these games start on time, if they get completed, is not going to be the IOC. It's not going to be Rio de Janeiro. You and I both know who's going to be the ultimate determining factor. NBC. They've paid billions to show these games. And NBC will be the one that says, we're on, we're not on. And NBC, they won't make that decision until all hope is lost because they have invested so much money in this. It's not only something that's designed to get a big rating, but they use it as a promotional vehicle for their fall programming. So, I know the games aren't going to get canceled. Not unless athletes start getting sick or, heaven forbid, an athlete faces a life-threatening situation. And even then, the IOC is almost powerless to pull the plug on the games. It will be NBC's decision. It'll be Dick Ebersol. I don't know if Dick Ebersol is still that actively involved, but it will be NBC's decision whether or not these games go on. And their television network, they're not gonna pull the plug on this puppy unless it's just they're at the edge of the cliff. So we can be concerned all we want about the health and safety of athletes, but the Peacock Network will be the one to determine whether these games go on or not. Now, here's the other thing that I wanted to bring up today, and I thought about this last night. I have been watching the Democratic Convention, not because I'm trying to make up my mind as a voter. For the purposes of this argument, I go ahead and say this. I'm a registered Republican, but I've been watching the conventions. I watched last week's convention in Cleveland and this week's convention in Philadelphia, and I admit it, for the entertainment value. I watched every one of those speeches last night, Joe Biden, Tim Kaine, President Obama, because I wanted to hear how many shots they were going to get in at Donald Trump. And that's it. I'm actually even less interested in watching Hillary Clinton tonight because it's one speaker. She'll get her shots in, sure. Actually, what I'm really looking forward to is Monday night, September 26th, the first Trump-Clinton debate. And again, I'm going to watch it not because I'm trying to make up my mind over who to vote for. I'm going to watch it for the entertainment value. It's going to be must-see TV because you know the way Donald Trump's going to conduct himself that night. And Hillary Clinton isn't exactly a clean fighter in campaigns either. Her husband was not the nicest guy in the world when he campaigned for the presidency in 1992. That's understandable. It's politics. It happens. Okay, but here's what, I floated this out on Facebook today. Monday night, September 26th, first debate. You know what else is going on that night? Monday Night Football, Falcons and Saints. And I've heard a couple of national people say this. They've said it on the radio, and so I can't show you a copy of what they've written. But a couple of well-known national personalities have said that maybe the NFL ought to consider doing something with that game because the real possibility is that game will get crushed in the ratings. Now, I will say this, and this is what I want you to respond to me on at Moneyball, if you are so inclined. If you were Roger Goodell, would you sit today with your top advisors and just mull over the possibility that it might be a good idea to move the game? Not so much because the NFL would suffer an embarrassment if they got beat in the ratings by networks like C-SPAN and Fox News Channel, but because, and I'm dead serious about this, isn't it in the best interest of the country to help direct the attention of most Americans toward that debate? When I ran this on Facebook today, a lot of people responded and said, you know what, I'm just going to watch football. And that's fine. I understand that. A lot of people in this country are already burned out on the campaign. A lot of people have already made up their minds who they're going to vote for. And a lot of people, frankly, are fantasy football players, and they'd rather watch football. And they might say, I'll tape the debate and watch it. But I keep going back to this, the symbolism of it. Shouldn't the NFL at least give some thought to not canceling, but postponing that game to Tuesday? Think about it, because it's an interesting thought. I know we're up against a break. We are up against a break, aren't we? Did I babble right past the break, Caitlin?
Nope, not yet.
Okay, well, I'm going to make certain I don't. But I really do think the NFL should at least take a little time in the next couple of weeks and at least consider the possibility of moving that game. I mean, this is a league that's had a real tumultuous offseason. Can they really deal with the embarrassment of getting beat by C-SPAN on Monday night? There's more to it than that, of course. Jude LaCava, great guy to talk to, and I love talking to him about anything, and we're going to talk about a lot of things with him. Cardinals, D-backs, Suns' new coaching staff, too. We'll talk about all that coming up on the Brad Sesmatt Show, sports360az.com and azcentral.com. It is the Brad Sesmatt Show on a Thursday. I'm Jeff Munn in for Brad, and we're glad to have you along at sports360az.com and azcentral.com. Anytime I want to really know what's going on, there's a lot of places I could turn. Brad's one, but one of my favorites to talk to about anything, from the price of Starbucks to anything going on in sports, is my good friend Jude LaCava, sports director at Fox 10. And we got a lot to talk about, Jude, so I'm going to get right to it. Cardinal camp opens, and I think you and I have been around this market a long time. I think I don't ever remember a camp with this kind of expectation and the bar being set so high. But I'll also say I think it's for pretty good reason. I think this has pretty much become Super Bowl or bust, hasn't it?
It really has, Jeff. I mean, you go back to the 90s when we knew going to training camp up there in Flagstaff that the Cardinals were going to be 4-12. I mean, not to demean the organization, but for many years, almost the first two decades, other than that one year with Vince Tobin, we knew this was the last stop at the NFL. Now, having said that, when you look at the change to University of Phoenix Stadium, 35 wins in 3 years under Bruce Arians, and a run to the NFC title game, you're exactly right. This enthusiasm, anticipation, I think, quite frankly, the struggles of some of the other pro teams in town. It's a Cardinals town. It's an NFL town. And the anticipation has never, ever, ever been higher going into a training camp, period.
You know, you bring that up, Jude, about the stadium, and I've mentioned this on the show before. I don't think Michael Bidwell gets enough credit in this regard. Every pro team that asks for public funding for a stadium will say, look, you give us this stadium, and it will make us more competitive. Well, the Cardinals have done that. Everything that they said they would do if they could get a new stadium, they've done. And it's Michael Bidwell, and I don't, you know, he's not the kind of guy that is going to get out in front at the parade. But I think he does deserve a lot of credit for he said he would do it, and he did it.
Yeah, and, you know, you have to look at the contrast at Sun Devil Stadium, you know, and as we know, the renovation continues out there in Tempe, but it was a horrible place to watch a game, and that those afternoon games, fans were courageous. I mean, they would get fried on those aluminum benches. It was really rough to see, and because of the poor records, it was like a home game for the visiting Broncos or Giants or Cowboys, as you remember. So it's quite a transformation. I don't think that there's an NFL team that has been transformed over the last two decades like the Arizona Cardinals, from really, you know, the black hole of the NFL to now a team by USA Today standards is considered one of the top two or three teams in all the NFL. So it's been remarkable. Mike, as a guy that got the job done, you're right. I mean, he really has done a remarkable job with leadership, good hires, and I think the Keim-Arians combo has been the best we've seen in decades for this franchise.
Jude LaCava, sports director of Fox 10, joining Jeff Munn for Brad Sesmat on this Thursday. One other question about the Cards, and I want to move on to some other subjects. I've heard more talk this summer about Drew Stanton, and not in a bad way. There's a lot of people around town that feel like, you know, certainly you want to go into the season with a healthy Carson Palmer, but if something happens, I get the sense there's a lot more confidence now than ever before in Drew Stanton's ability to handle this football team as a quarterback. Do you get that same sense?
Well, I think they really believe, and he's been told that one of the reasons why he decided to come back, remember, he was a free agent. He's been told that when Carson, who, as we know, isn't the youngest quarterback in the world, packs it in, he will have a very legitimate shot of becoming the frontline quarterback. And listen, before his own knee injury, he was doing a very good job. I don't think he's quite the long bomb thrower that Palmer is, but he understands the system. He's been in it. He's a competitor. He's a big physical guy, and I would agree with you. I think the other part of this really is how this team has kind of reloaded with Chandler Jones, that deal to bring an outstanding pass rusher, Robert Kempiece, the drafting in the first round of this young man who I think, you know, to me, and I hate to put a tag on him, but I think he could be that good. He has all the presence of a young Eric Swan. I think he could be a real early impact player. The return of Tyrann Mathieu. They've added some few parts with DJ Humphreys now vying for that starting position along the offensive line. I think if you look at it on paper, Jeff, this may be the most talented team going to a training camp. And here's the other thing that's not talked a lot about. You're getting returning players, a lot of returning starters that understand Bruce's system now, that have been in the system the last couple of years. And that is extremely valuable when it comes to comfort zone and system.
I agree with you, and I think you hit right on it, and Steve Keim, I think, is the guy that deserves a lot of credit for that because of his player acquisitions and especially his drafting. Jude LaCava from Fox 10 joining us. I wish we could just talk about football, but I'm going to change the subject because, again, I love to hear your perspective on this. Brad had Pedro on yesterday, Paula Bovin on either Monday or Tuesday, and I get my days mixed up. But the inevitable question about the Diamondbacks is now starting to kind of turn. There was the talk about Chip Hale last week, but now the focus, at least from the media, I think, is starting to turn toward the front office. And the question becomes, is what is going on right now tarnishing Tony La Russa's legacy? And he's been very candid in interviews this week. What's your sense of where this thing is going to go? Because a couple of weeks ago, Jude, I was still in the camp that, you know, this is a one-year abnormality, that, you know, they go to camp healthy next year, everything will be fine. I'm starting to get the sense, just from reading the tea leaves, that there might be something deeper than that.
Well, I want to backtrack to what I think is a really important point in assessing the front office and how this thing played out over the last year and a half, 2 years. When you look back at, I don't think anybody would argue with this, that Tony La Russa as a baseball manager, there's an argument to be made that he could be in the top five managers of all time, not
Agreed.
Just a Hall of Famer, but that remarkable, okay? But let's also go back to his history. There's a big difference between managing a game, managing a team, and talent evaluation. What do I mean by that? Let's go back to his early days in the mid-'80s. And let's look at the general managers he worked with. And he was really blessed to not only be a great manager, but to work with, and you know him well, mm-hmm. in the White Sox organization, Roland Heeman.
Yes.
He goes to the Oakland A's. Roland Heeman, of course, a Hall of Famer. He goes to the Oakland A's. He's got Sandy Alderson, who is considered a top five GM in the game. Then he goes to St. Louis, and he's got the brilliance of Walt Jocketty. I guess what I'm trying to get at here is that as a manager, nobody can argue with Tony's record. As a talent evaluator, assessor of deals and assessor of talent, it's a different ballgame. It's a new position as chief baseball officer. And I think that's where we have to distinguish what's happened here. You know, let's get into it, a specific example. How much did they truly vet Shelby Miller, not just on his stuff, but his mental capacity as a pitcher, his toughness, his poise? There's so much that goes into evaluation when you either draft or deal as a general manager, and it's new to Tony. Not making an excuse. I just think it's an Achilles heel. I think when you also add somewhat of the inexperience of Dave Stewart, you say, okay, wow, wait a minute. And Paula kind of nailed it. These are guys in new positions to some degree. Yeah, they know the game, but they've not been in the position of GM to evaluate how to put a clubhouse together, how to really assess talent. And I think that's been the Achilles heel of this. And let's also say this. Look, I'll be the first one to raise my hand. I bought into at least the sense that this could be a very competitive team, maybe not a division winner, but at least a team that would play 500.
I did too.
Collapse. So I have to, you know, raise my hand and say, hey, that's on me. But having said that, I think Tony's admitting that what's happened this season is not a Chip Hale issue. Yeah, I want to see him play with more fire. It's an organizational systemic problem that just didn't work. And yet Tony did say he still believes in this very young core of talent. And I think that's the one thing that I kind of missed is that we're looking at a lot of first and second year big leaguers out there, Jeff, that are still trying to find their way, and they're talented, whether they be Brandon Drury or Jake Lamb or Nick Ahmed, a lot of guys that are just trying to get their traction in Major League Baseball. So when you add that to the pitching woes, you see a team just scuffling in last place. I think this is a systemic problem. I think it would be a shame to fire Chip Hale. He was a good manager last year. He did a nice job. I think they have to look in the mirror and say, as an organization, how do we kind of adjust this situation and hang in there and try to come back and improve it next year?
I got about 30 seconds, Jude, and I want to get a comment from you before we let you go about the announcement yesterday that, among others, Ty Corbin is joining Earl Watson's coaching staff at the Suns. I love that hire. Not just because we remember him as a player and how heartbroken Cotton Fitzsimmons was to lose him in the expansion draft in 89, but this guy has established himself as a really good teacher. I think it's a great, great hire for the Suns.
I would agree with you, and I think the way the staff is backing up, let's face it, a very young coach in Earl Watson, Jay Triano, been a former NBA coach. You bring in a guy like Ty Corbin. You've got some of the younger guys. It's a very good staff. I think we can finally say there's a plan and vision in place. They have to stick to it now with this young core of players and a nice coaching staff. And let's just see them be patient and cultivate the core of talent here and stay on this course at least for the next couple of years and see where it can take them. I think the one thing that Suns fans are at least moderately excited about is the plan in place that suggests we have a vision here. Now let's give it some time to cultivate moving forward.
Jude, I appreciate it. Wish we had more time, but we'll have you on again soon. Thanks very much.
Anytime, Jeff. Always a pleasure. Always enjoy talking to you. And anytime, man. I thoroughly enjoy it.
Thanks, Jude. And I'll call you soon, I promise. Jude LaCava from Fox 10, who is, and I say that because Jude is, I don't want to get too personal, but he's been a big support to me the last couple months, and you're not going to find a better human being on this planet than Jude LaCava. And he's also one of the most dialed in guys in terms of the local sports scene. When we come back, I'm gonna use the next segment to kind of build on what Jude was talking about in relation to Chip Hale. I wrote a column for the website that talked about why I don't think moving on Chip Hale would be a good idea. And it's not just, you know, not his fault, et cetera, et cetera. Let me explain, and we're going to talk more about what I brought up in the first segment because I'm getting some reaction to it. Should the NFL move the Monday night game the night of the Trump-Clinton debate number one? You think about that, and we'll come back and talk about it next on the Brad Sesmatch Show. Brad Sesmatch Show on Thursday. Jeff Munn for Brad, and we appreciate you being with us. And I'm a little reluctant to get personal. I just did that with Jude, talking about Jude. But I guess I should say it, too, that I've heard from a lot of people, friends, just people that have known me from my work, that have been so supportive in the last 8-9 months. And I'm not going to go into the reasons why. You probably know why. And I wish I could tell them all how much I appreciate it, but I've run out of stamps. See, Caitlin's looking at me like, stamps? What are those? but it means more to me than I can tell you. And I've always said when I had news to report, I would report it. And I don't really have what I would call blockbuster news yet. But as they say in the business, we're working on it. All right. Two things very quickly. And again, we thank Jude LaCava for being with us. Terrific insight from Jude. I wrote a column about this a couple of days ago on here at sports360az.com about Chip Hale. I'm going to just do this for a minute. The last time I said this on a radio show, there was an office in Phoenix got really mad. They know who they are. And I understand why they would not agree with this position, but here we go. Yeah, there's the argument what's happening is not Chip's fault. And I don't know if that's entirely true, but I want you to think about this for a minute. First of all, I understand fans get passionate and they want something done. They want heads to roll. I get it. That's part of being passionate fans. I get that completely. But here's the thing to consider. If now Tony La Russa hired Chip Hale and this was their handpicked guy, my nose itches. Sorry. It's not really good television, but and they wanted, this was the guy that Tony handpicked. And Tony, I think, has done a really admirable job of just letting Chip do his job without being hunched on his shoulder. If, hypothetically, they made a move on Chip today, that means effectively Chip got a year and a half and about 10 games to manage this team. If they were going to go out in the market, and I really, my gut feeling is whoever finished out the season probably wouldn't be a serious candidate for the job full time. Tony La Russa, as Jude has mentioned, and I agree with him, I still think you have the core of a team that can be pretty good when they're healthy, and they haven't been healthy all year. Obviously, there are concerns about Shelby Miller. Other than that, if they just get healthy, they're a much better baseball team. So going to spring training next year, they can legitimately, just as on health alone, feel like they're going to have a better year. And because of that, my guess is Tony La Russa would want to go out and get as qualified a manager as he could if he had to hire a new manager. Okay, who's the most qualified manager sitting at home right now? My guess is it's Ron Gardenhier, who managed the Twins to multiple division titles, to American League Championship Series. Okay, just ask yourself this question. If Tony La Russa calls Ron Gardenhier and says, come on, I need you to manage this club, how excited will Gardenhier be to take over a team where the last manager got a year and a half? I don't think it would be that easy to hire a big-name manager, have him walk into this situation. And again, even though Tony La Russa has been very hands-off and has stayed away from being hunched on Chip's shoulder, there's always going to be that thing about you're managing a team that's being run by Tony La Russa. And I just don't, I honestly don't know whether or not it's in the best interest of the Diamondbacks going forward to make a move to remove Chip Hale as the manager just yet. Because I think it would be very hard to get the kind of manager they'd want to take over. All right. Now, We have gotten some reaction to what I brought up earlier in the show, and I'm going to expound on it a little bit because I think it's an interesting topic. What I mentioned in the first segment of the show is that, and I don't want this to turn into a political show, but the very first Donald Trump-Hillary Clinton debate is scheduled for Monday night, September 26th, the same night the Falcons play the Saints on Monday Night Football. There is an undeniable entertainment aspect to that debate. Even if you've made up your mind about who you're going to vote for, even if you're burned out on conventions and campaigns, people are going to watch that debate for the entertainment factor. You know that Donald Trump is going to do something goofy. And Hillary Clinton, as I said, listen, if, you know, however you feel about the Clintons, one thing's very certain. They're dirty campaigners. And you have to be that way sometimes in the political field. I'm not knocking them for it. That's just the way it goes. So to sit there and say that people will not be interested in that debate is ludicrous. Not because the nation needs to come to a decision. We're all interested in seeing car wrecks because it's visual. It's you can't turn away from it. Okay, given that, would the NFL really consider moving Monday Night Football? I think the answer to that is no, they won't move the game. But would they think about it? Yeah, I bet they would. I bet they would. I bet Roger Goodell has thought about it a little, thinking, oh, you know, can we deal with the PR hit if we get beaten the ratings by CNN and C-SPAN? Also, there might be the angle that we want to do what's in the best interest of the country, and the country should be focused on this debate, and we're going to move Falcons and Saints to Tuesday, or we'll make it a side Sunday night game, and NBC can regionalize the game to other parts of the country. I'm telling you, I think they'll think about it. They won't do it. They won't do it. But I'll bet they're thinking about it. And I personally, they should think about it. Now, for the record, and to be fair, Major League Baseball will have games scheduled that night. As a matter of fact, if you'll give me a second here, I'll just bring up the schedule for September 26th. There'll be pennant race games and what have you. Let's just take a look here. The D-backs will be in Washington. Cubs will be at Pittsburgh. There's 10 games scheduled on the Major League schedule on September 26th. Not one of them will get canceled. And shouldn't. Rob Manfred's not going to wipe out a 10-game schedule on Monday, September 26th and reschedule a bunch of doubleheaders. The Mets are at Miami. That could be a game to decide a wild card spot. They're not going to cancel their games, so the NFL probably won't. But I would just be curious, and I'm a little curious why no one in the national media has brought this up. Because you know what? It is something that needs to be debated a little bit, or at least discussed. Why hasn't, pardon the interruption, talked about it? That show's based in Washington. Are you telling me that there hasn't been some discussion in the nation's capital about that debate against Monday Night Football? You think ESPN hasn't thought about it a little bit? I mean, you know, it's worth a discussion. But again, at the end of the day, are they going to cancel the game? Well, they won't cancel it. But will they move it? No, of course they won't. And it's not because they're the high and mighty NFL and we don't move things. They won't move it because it's just logistically too tough. It's tough on ticket holders. It's tough on the network. But I'll bet they're thinking about it, and they should. They should at least, if I was Roger Goodell, I think what I'd do is just issue a statement saying, look, we're going to play the game, but we're okay if you decide you need to watch the debate. Tape our game, watch it later, something of that nature. And again, my Twitter handle is @Moneyball. If you'd like to share your thoughts with me on that subject, a lot of people did this morning on Facebook, and I appreciate it because I think it's a very interesting topic. It gets into a lot of different things, and we're going to go to a break in a second. But it gets into a lot of things about where this country's priorities are. I mean, at that point, what's more important to us, Monday Night Football or the presidential debate? And you and I both know what the majority of Americans are going to answer at that point, which is okay. It's great that we have such a passion for a sport, and many people have already made up their minds about who they're going to vote for. At the same time, we also like entertainment. And if you're going to tell me that debate's not going to be entertaining, wake up. Anyway, Bill Gutekunst, who's also very deeply involved in entertainment, has a couple of great movies to talk about this week, and we'll do that with Goody right after this break on the Brad Sesmatt Show. It is now time for our weekly visit with Gannett and AZCentral.com Chief Film and Media. Oh, I like that way that curtain. Oh, I never seen that before. Bill Gutekunst joins us. Bill, of course, is in deep-seated fear that I'm not going to allow him time to talk about Jason Bourne and Nerve, and I'm going to instead get him into a discussion of which was better, the Addams Family with John Astin or the Munsters with Fred Gwynne. But no, I want Bill to have time to talk about these movies because they're both really good movies, and I'm not a movie guy. First of all, Bill, good morning. I do have something else I want to ask you about from a media standpoint. If we have time, I'll get to it. But the Jason Bourne movie, first of all, there's been a lot of buildup to this. I mean, I think going back all the way to March or February, we're seeing trailers. And everything I've heard is this is really going to be a good latest installment in the Bourne franchise.
Well, it's all right. And by the way, it's been longer than I think. As soon as I talked to Damon last year when he did The Martian, and that word with he was starting to shoot it then. And I mean, as soon as they said that he was coming back, because of course,
didn't they run trailers in the Super Bowl?
I think yeah, some kind of just as little teaser kind of things.
Yeah,
and it's fine. It's like I'll tell you what it is. It's the action is still great. Paul Greengrass is, he did the second and third Bourne movies. He didn't do the first one. Doug Liman did, but that's a really good movie too. The fourth one was Jeremy Renner is like a different kind of Bourne, and then they said, "Oh, we're going to bring we're going to get the band back together," and everybody's excited. The action stuff is still really good. Greengrass sort of he didn't pioneer it, but he really makes that work. That steady that shaky camera, where you feel like you're in the action, and he sets these giant set pieces in like real cities with all these people. Like there's a demonstration in Greece that they're chasing people through and stuff, and it's pretty amazing. It's just the story. He doesn't really have. Before he was always like, "Who am I?" He was trying to figure out who he was. Why does he know how to do all this cool stuff? And he knows that stuff now. So now they got to come up with a reason for him to still be kind of. He's not angry, but angsty or something. I don't know what you would call it. And Damon is a really good actor and a great guy. He's really fun to talk to. But the story is just not as deep as the other ones. If this movie didn't say Bourne, I don't think people would like it as much as they're going to. On the other hand, if it didn't say Bourne, they would say, wow, for an action movie, that's pretty great. So,
let me ask you a real quick question in general about sequels. I remember I went to see Major League 2 before I saw the original Major League, and it was not hard for me to pick up on the storyline. I did go back and see the first one. Maybe that's not the best example. But here's where I'm going with this. If a person walks into the theater to see this installment of the Bourne series, how challenging will it be for them to pick up on what the basis of the Bourne identity is all about?
A little bit. I mean, they do some catching up with you. By the way, I guess that's better than I saw Police Academy 4, and I felt like I understood the story. But they do a little bit of catching up, but it's still sometimes a character will pop up and you're supposed to think, ooh, look, that person's back. And, but for the most part, they're kind of new characters and new stories. And they got Tommy Lee Jones.
Yeah, he's good. I love Tommy Lee Jones. The other movie that you've got to talk about this week, and I was reading the synopsis of this because, again, Jeff doesn't go to movies a lot. Really is intriguing, Nerve. And it's, at first, you think, uh-oh, this is one of those where somebody jumps into a video game. But it's not really like that, is it? I have a feeling this one has got, this is going to be a sleeper kind of hit.
I think it might actually be pretty popular, particularly among young people. I think it's a great idea that they got stupid. But what it is Nerve is... In the context of this movie, it's a game. It's an online game, a truth or dare type game. And you got to pay. You can either be a watcher or a player. And if you're a watcher, you got to pay like $20 a day or something to do it. And it's online and it's underground. It's secretive. And the sort of slogan is snitches get stitches. And that comes into play at some point during the movie. And Emma Roberts plays this girl. She's high school good girl and all that. She gets involved in it. And what you do is the watchers, who are the online people, they come up with dares for you to do. And if you do them, if you go kiss a guy in a restaurant, just walk up to him and kiss him,
maybe you get $50. And you know what the money is of going up front.
Right.
And so you do that, and it becomes kind of addictive. But the thing, and then the dares get increasingly dangerous and expensive, and until they're like harmful, you know, I mean, like really dangerous, life-threatening. And, you know, it's tempting. Even a year or two ago, you might have said, well, this is just kind of a horror story. It's sort of far-fetched. I mean, that could never happen. If you look at the explosion of Pokemon Go, and I thought this movie is kind of a blend of Pokemon Go, Saw, and Hunger Games. If you look at that, you see how quickly this stuff can happen and how quickly it can rise, and the almost insane popularity of it.
Yeah.
So it's not that it couldn't happen. It's just that things escalate a little too quickly. It all takes place over the course of like one night, and she goes from never having done anything in her life to being like this extreme danger, you know, like it gets into the finals of this thing and all that. And it kind of devolves. I thought the idea was good. The acting is pretty good, but I think that it kind of falls apart about halfway through.
I wonder too, and it's interesting you bring that up, and we're talking to Bill Gutekunst, Gannett, AZ Central Chief Film Critic. If the Pokemon Go craze, and I got kind of dragged into it a little bit, Erica, you didn't drag me into it. My neighbor Erica had me go out one night and chase Pokemon characters. You didn't drag me into it, Eric. It's okay. But I wonder if that will also spur a few people to go see the movie if they understand the storyline.
I think so. And I think, I mean, my kids want to see it because it's anything. I think that one of the things, I love social media, by the way. Love it.
Me too.
Great. I think it's a great reporting tool. I know more about my cousins than I have in the last 25 years, stuff like that. But one of the things that happens, though, is you can see that with the rise of Snapchat, sometimes, and that can be a valuable tool too, but sometimes things get popular just because everybody else likes them. You know what I mean?
Right.
And I think that that's how things go viral sometimes. I'm liking this because everybody else does.
Right.
And I think that that's what the good idea behind this movie is, how dangerous that can be.
Well, yeah, and there's been a lot of stories about that.
Yeah, and I wondered a little bit about that when I was watching. I was like, wow, I wonder, you know, if somebody's probably already come up with this type of game, or maybe this type of game already exists. I mean, I'm old. I wouldn't know. You know, my kids probably know more. I'm sure they know more about it than I do. It's impossible to police, and it's impossible to stop. I mean,
Yeah, it is, and you can't police it, but we keep hearing stories about people getting robbed while playing Pokemon Go, or people discovering San Diego, they discovered a dead body.
They walk off a cliff or something.
Yeah, it's very dangerous. I'm checking here to see how much time we got, because I want to get you into this debate that I started at the top of the show, and I'm going to go ahead and do it, because it's an internet show. If we go over time, who cares? We can hold the internet hostage. First Clinton-Trump debate is Monday, September 26th. Same night as, how much time do we have, Caitlin? 3 minutes? Okay, good. We can have time to get into this. Trump-Clinton debate number one is going up against Falcons-Saints Monday Night Football. I'll say the name. Tony Kornheiser said on his radio show 2 months ago, God help the NFL that night. And I agree with him. If you were Roger Goodell, you won't cancel the game, you won't move the game, but would you think about it?
One quick shout out. I love Tony Kornheiser, is one of my personal heroes.
Me too. I'm glad that he's still doing a radio show. He's just going to do it as a podcast.
He's great on the radio. And the few times that we've been together, he's been exceptionally nice to me. I think if you're Roger Goodell, you never blink. I think that's part of being Roger Goodell. And I think that with the insane popularity of the NFL comes a certain amount of arrogance. And I think they've got it there. I don't think it's their civic duty to move it or anything. And frankly, I'm a big sports fan, but once the Monday Night Football has diminished to me, I don't watch it like I used to. It's not like a destination like it used to.
Right. It's not their premier package anymore.
No, but I don't know. I mean, Monday Night Football, pretty much by definition, is always going to be on Monday night. I don't.
If I could just jump in, Bill, the reason I'm bringing this up is because we both know, you said it, there's a little arrogance to the NFL, and they don't like getting beat in the ratings by anything. And there's a real danger that night, not because the nation still needs to make up its mind, but because it's Trump and you never know what Trump's going to do. I think there's a real danger they could wake up the next morning and find out that their football game got beat by C-SPAN. And see, they don't like that.
But that's why I kind of hope they do it, because I think it's beyond that. I think it goes beyond it. I mean, you're right. I mean, nobody's going to – it's probably not – basically, at this point, people are preaching to the choir. I mean, I just put something on Facebook myself, and I saw your thing up there earlier. But basically, if you say anything nice about Hillary Clinton on Facebook, or even not mean about Hillary Clinton, you get this automatic response, Benghazi, you know, like exclamation mark, like that, like as if that were some argument. But these debates should be spectacle. I mean, they should be fun. They should be informative. And I feel like it's still something people ought to watch. The reason that I hope they don't move it is because I want to see if people still feel that way, or if they will watch a, you know, mid-level game between two teams that know, you know, the people in their cities. Well, I guess in New Orleans they do, but who aren't expected to do much this year. And you know, I mean, that's kind of, it's not quite a dog game, but it's pretty close. I mean, but as you know, the NFL is so popular, dog games are still the number one show on cable. And so, what I would like to find out is, you know, where do we stand? Where do people stand as a country? I mean, there's going to be some people that are going to watch football no matter what. There's going to be some people who watch the debates no matter what.
Right.
But there's this huge audience in the middle, and I would really like to see which way they would go.
So in 30 seconds, and I think I've got 30 seconds, am I making too big a deal out of this, or you see this becoming a talking point the closer we get to that day?
I just don't think they'll move. I don't think there's much they can do, and I don't think there's anything they will do. I think it's interesting, just for the reasons I said. I always like trying to figure out where we really stand. Are we really this divided? And sadly, I'm starting to think, yeah, we are. But I'd also like to see what, you know, are we willing to take our medicine and do something that's good for us at the expense of, like, a game that nobody even cares about?
Right. No, exactly. It'll be interesting. Bill, appreciate it. Have a good weekend. We'll talk to you next week.
You too. Thanks.
Bill Gutekunst, Gannett, NAZI Central, chief film and media critic. I will be curious to see if there is a debate about this. But he's right. They're not moving the game. And Major League Baseball is not canceling their schedule. But it is Trump and Clinton or whatever. Anyway, this here show is available for you at sports360az.com and azcentral.com, and we appreciate you tuning in. I'm Jeff Munn for Brad Sesmat. It's a Thursday. Go out and enjoy it. And stick around here, too. You'll enjoy sticking around here just as much as you will going outside.